Michael Pollan of the Omnivore's Dilemma fame, the man who challenges us to rethink how we eat, well, he's taken on a surprising project. He set out to learn to cook. His new book is Cooked, A Natural History of Transformation. After all his forays into the hows and the whys of our food systems, it dawned on him he really didn't cook. He more or less assembled with good food, but he believes that isn't what cooking is really about. Michael, it has been far too long. It's good to have you back.
Thank you. It's very good to be back.
So, Michael, one of the things you bring up in the book is that cooking does not have the same respectability, the same regard as literature does, or the arts, or the sciences. Why do you think that is?
Well, it's a good question. At other times it has been held in higher regard. I think it's been denigrated in our own time for a couple of reasons. One is that it has been women's work for a very long time. At least home cooking has. And the arbiters of prestige are very often men in this culture. So they didn't completely appreciate the wonders of cooking and the complexity of it. But another reason, I think, is that what I think of as the agro-industrial food system has deliberately denigrated cooking because corporations very much wanted to take over this work. And so you see this concerted campaign that goes, back 75 years, but really intensifies after World War II, with the food industry trying to persuade you that this is not a legitimate use of your time and that they would be very happy to do it for you and relieve you of the burden, long before anybody thought about cooking as a burden.
Yeah, but it's really interesting because I think, was it Laura Shapiro who did a book about that
mm-hmm.
era?
Terrific book, yeah.
Yeah, it was Something from the Oven, I think it was called.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't she mention that in those days when women who worked at home, and many women did, the one thing they really enjoyed was cooking.
Exactly. There was an effort to kind of lump all housework together, but women said they liked cooking. Cooking was a creative outlet. But I think what happened, too, as women got busier and more women went into the workplace, something had to give. And we were at this very interesting, kind of post-Betty Friedan moment where there was a very uncomfortable conversation unfolding. Women were going back to work. Women's liberation was very much in the air. And there was tension over who would do the housework. It had to be renegotiated. And before that conversation could be completely played out and resolved, the food industry very self-consciously stepped in and said, "We'll take care of it. We've got you covered." And they came forward with fast food and processed food. And it was a very deliberate effort on their part, in fact, to hitch their agenda to that of feminism. And there is a wonderful billboard that I can remember from the 70s. Kentucky Fried Chicken had this billboard all over the country, giant bucket of fried chicken with just two words above it, women's liberation. So that if you went down the path of using fast food, that was the progressive thing to do. So, it's that kind of campaign, I think, that really undermined home cooking. And it did it for, very good capitalist reasons. I've written about food for a long time, as you know, and I've gone back to the farm and forward to the, food processors. There's no money to be made in farming or selling simple food. All the money is in processing it. And it's no wonder now that, of your food dollar, something like 92% of it does not go to the farmer. It goes to processors and packagers and shippers and advertisers and marketers. So the way you make money is shrinking the amount that we spend on actual farm goods and getting us to let corporations cook for us.
One very striking thing you wrote was about the senses that cooking appeals to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Can you explain?
Yeah. One of the interesting things about Western culture is over time it has tended to devalue the physical senses and to elevate the eye and the ear to some extent. But the sense of taste, smell, and touch have been considered in the whole tradition of Western philosophy and literature to be lower and more feminine, by the way. It's definitely tied to a misogynistic streak. And cooking trafficked in those lower senses. It was stuff you could taste and smell, and that was more basic. The other problem with cooking in Western culture, of course, is Puritanism. We look down on those activities that both animals and us like to do. And eating is one, and sex, of course, is another. And so Puritanism had trouble with both those things because they were base and physical. And I think
But the
that
most
in,
fun.
Yes, I know. Well, fun is a problem if you're a Puritan.
I guess it is, isn't it?
So much of our culture has been about this kind of sublimation of those senses, and cooking appeals very frankly to it, although we sometimes pretend otherwise. You know, one of the things I talk about in the book is this wonderful euphemistic vocabulary around cheese. Now, cheese, you know, appeals to some of the basest sensory desires. It smells like human bodies. And I finally found a cheesemaker who was willing to kind of admit that, yeah, this is part of what, you know, a good stinky cheese is about. And Freud has written about the fact that we basically wanted to elevate ourselves above the animals. You know, when we stood up, we were no longer on all fours sniffing the rear ends of things all over the world. We were standing up, and we privileged the eye and the ear at that point.
You talk about some of the imperatives of why to cook. And we know about the family around the dinner table, and I don't mean to shove that aside and say it's not important, but some of the other things you talk about really got to me.
Well, I think there are a lot of very good reasons to cook, well beyond the fact that it's really good for your health and your family's kind of psychological well-being, and it's very good for your social life to sit down with other people. And I mean, all this is kind of obvious. But I found that there were some other virtues. I think of cooking as a political act. I mean, I think we've kind of fallen into this place where we are so dependent on others to do everything for us, and that all we do is we take the one thing we do for a living, we sell that into the market, and we take that money and use that to outsource everything in our lives. And that leads to a kind of dependence that's almost infantilizing. There is something very satisfying in providing for yourself, even to some extent. And I would include gardening in that, too.
Right. Yeah.
You feel so much more competent, self-reliant, independent, when you know, hey, I could make a loaf of bread if I wanted to, if I needed to. So that's one thing that to me is very important. The other is our senses these days. We spend our lives in front of screens. And, you know, we have five senses, not just two, not just the eye and the ear. And cooking reemploys your senses. And I think one of the reasons that some people are rediscovering cooking now is the fact that it is enormously satisfying to once again use your hands, to once again use your sense of smell and taste. And cooking is one of those rare activities that engages all five senses.
Michael, thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Michael Pollan is author of Cooked, A Natural History of Transformation. Michael uses a pasta sauce to illustrate the art of the braise. So find his recipe, meat, sugo, and pasta, on the website, splendidtable.org.